Let's have council return to order. Welcome, everybody. Would you please read the roll? Call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have two items on the agenda this afternoon. Why don't you read both, and we'll take them in turn.
Item 23, direct the City of Portland to implement the Charles Jordan Rule, also known as the Rooney Rule, when making direct appointments. And 24, direct council offices and city bureaus to submit direct appointment reports on a semi-annual basis.
I want to bring up some of our leadership from the city, namely Anna Canwit and Dante James, and perhaps others as well soon after them to talk us through these two proposals. I want to thank Sam Sachs in particular, who's here as well, because you're the guy that called this to our attention and called us to hold our own values up and follow them. So thank you, Sam. And that's why we're here today, and we appreciate you. So with that, let's turn it over to Anna and Dante to walk us through these resolutions. I know we've got some proposed amendments, at least to one of them, and we'll take those up as well.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, Anna Canwit, Director of the Bureau of Human Resources. Pleased to be here today to introduce the Charles Jordan rule, soon to be amended to be a standard, as I understand it. It's interesting, today seems to be the day for equity initiatives by the City of Portland. Earlier this morning, I participated as a member of a panel providing information on workforce equity on behalf of the government director for the racial equity that we are a member of, the Government Alliance. So the genesis of the city's Charles Jordan rule stems from the National Football League's Rooney Rule, which in essence has required each team with a coach or general manager opening to interview at least one qualified minority candidate. Oregon has a similar statute on its books. The Charles Jordan Rule family, as you know, has graciously allowed the city to use his name, reflects his longstanding commitment to diversity and equity, as well as the city's continuance of that commitment. If adopted, this provides another tool for the city to use to increase its diversity of our workforce, and most particularly at the highest levels of the workforce, the category of bureau directors. It is not, as I have stated before, our only tool and shouldn't be viewed as that, but we are hopeful that adoption of this will help in our efforts to diversify the city at our highest levels. One thing I wanted to point out, that the Charles Jordan rule before you does go a step further from the Rooney Rule, as it includes not only minority candidates, but also those who identify as a person with a disability. This is also in keeping with City Council's past resolution that the city become a model employer of persons with a disability. So we believe that was an important addition to the rule. Charles Jordan rule provides that whenever the commissioner in charge decides to utilize a formal recruitment process, they must interview any qualified minority candidates and any qualified candidates who identify as a person with a disability. The resolution does acknowledge and retain the commissioner in charge's discretion to directly appoint a bureau director, and does not require this interview process when hiring through a direct appointment when the commissioner in charge has already identified an ideal candidate. I do urge you to pass the resolution. As I earlier stated, I think its passage provides yet another tool in our basket as we make every effort to increase diversity at every level of our workforce. Thank you.
Thank you. Dante.
Thank you. Dante James, Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Good afternoon, Council. I'm very pleased to bring this resolution in conjunction with the Charles Jordan rule that is essentially a direct appointment reporting protocol. There's been discussion about the process for use of human resources, regular process for hiring, and there is also an ability for managers, supervisors, and bureau directors, as well as commissioners, to go outside of that particular process and directly appoint someone to a position. So in looking at that process, direct appointments can be used to increase diversity. They can be used in a way that is oblivious to diversity. And so this is an opportunity to try to gather exactly how it's being used in the city. And so in discussions with HR and Anna and others, there was an opportunity to talk about a process that would require a waiver first before a direct appointment could be done. That was part of the conversation, but also in hearing more, that before we even went there, we needed to know how, in fact, it was being used before we placed a particular restriction on its use. And so this protocol would require, one, all bureau directors to sign off on any and all direct appointments in their bureau. Would require then reporting by commissioners as well as bureau directors on a semi-annual basis for the demographics of those appointments, the positions that they were appointed to, whether the position is management, supervisory, et cetera, whether the ethnicities, gender, and status as a veteran or person with a disability for any direct appointment, and then whether that position is going to be then advertised within the next 12 months, because what we often see is for temporary appointments, that person is then just slid into a full-time position, permanent position, which then doesn't allow for community members to participate in the process. And so that's essentially what this is. It's a reporting protocol, so we can then determine at the end of a one-year period and two reporting periods what it looks like, and then my office will be able to come back with recommendations based on the data that's been derived from the reporting.
Mayor and Commissioners, I wanted to comment on this as well, if this
yes,
is
please,
a good time
go
to do that. I think this is a really important first step. One of the things that Office of Equity and Human Rights has been stating, and again in the seminar, was a panel today, that we need to be metrics-driven in order to determine whether we really are meeting our goals around equity and diversity. And in this case, we simply don't have the data to tell us what temporary appointments, the impact of temporary appointments on our workforce. As Dante noted, when you come into the city as a temporary, when we do a recruitment, if you're already in that job, generally you have an advantage. You know the job, people know you. And that can work in both ways. We know that people have brought in persons of color, women, as temporary employees and have moved to permanent jobs. But we also know that, white males have been brought in as temporaries as well. Other than our data around our focused outreach program, we have not tracked temporary appointments in this manner, nor have we looked at what the next step is. Do the temporary employees then become permanent employees? So is that a pipeline that's being used? So I think this is, before we get to the waiver type issue that Dante brought up, it's really important to have this data as well so that we actually know the impact of this practice.
Great. Questions?
So I guess when I've gone through bureau director recruitment processes, I've never known the race of the applicants. How is that going to change under this rule?
It really would only change in terms of in the interview process. It can be known that a person, their race will be identified to you. Either sometimes people raise it, sometimes it is observable, and similar with a person of disability, with people self-disclose, but it generally is going to be observable.
But isn't the goal of this to make sure minorities,
yes,
and people with disabilities,
yes,
and,
so we,
and women make it to the interview round? But
provide.
I've looked at, does BHR collect,
yes,
the racial information?
We collect that information, and then we would be providing that to the commissioner in charge. We collect that now, so.
Yeah, okay.
So there's necessarily been routinely
communicated. No, we do not routinely communicate that. In this case, in terms of the implementation, I think a best practice would be to ask permission from the candidate to provide that information. We obtain it in confidence.
Anna, I want to turn to the second resolution about compiling the data. Do we have any current sense of what percentage of council hires are either direct appointments or competitive hires?
In terms of bureau directors or just generally?
In terms of council offices.
Oh.
This appears to cover council offices and city bureaus.
Yes. I don't know. My sense is that there are more direct appointments than recruitments, in part given the nature of the work in terms of, you know, policy advisors. I know often looking at recent graduates from places like Portland State who have degrees in urban policy development, those kinds of things. Often it is by word of mouth of a candidate that we're aware of that, like for our focused outreach program, we have offered candidates. I know Commissioner Saltzman hired one of those in his bureau, in his office.
But, I mean, for example, in the council offices, the people we hire serve at will.
Yes.
They don't have the civil service protection. They don't have the contract protection. So traditionally, in the political offices, we've seen, we've viewed employees hired by commissioners as different than bureau employees. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so the purpose of the resolution, at least at this stage, is to make sure we collect good data at the bureau level and the council office. But it doesn't presuppose we're going to treat them the same down the road when we look at the data.
No, it doesn't change their status at all. And the resolution does explicitly exclude seasonal and casuals. I mean, in recognition of the number of those employees currently that we do, obviously, via direct appointment. So that would not be included in the reporting. But the reporting part does not change the employee's status. It doesn't, you know, change them from at-will to regular.
So, Dante, given that the council offices, the employees of council offices are at-will, and it's a, they're political offices, so people are hired or campaign managers or people that have, you know, pre-existing relationships, and they come and go. Just, I think for the record, it'd be important for you to explain why you think district council offices should be treated the same as city bureaus, where employees have a plethora of protections.
Well, in the same way, I mean, I have no protection at this point. I mean, it was a 2-year contract and it's gone. I mean, I think the short answer is that I'm asking council to be under the same reporting requirements as all of the bureaus, with the expectation that council do what it says it wants to do, which is be conscious of the diversity in the city.
Yeah, so you might walk us through the council staff, bureau directors, are commissioner appointees in each case, and they're all at will.
That's correct. And there are a few other classifications by ordinance since the charter was reformed that we, by ordinance through council, have designated as at will, also due to policy level duties in those positions, but primarily bureau directors and council offices.
Deputy directors of bureaus.
Deputy directors would fall into that second category because of the policy-making responsibilities of those positions. They are at will. My labor relations manager is also in that category because of the policy-type decisions that he makes,
so
or recommendations.
Are at-will appointees that can be direct appointed by bureau directors?
Yes.
Or they can go through a competitive process?
Yes.
So they have the same discretion for those hires that we have, but both hiring entities, whether it's one of us or one of you as bureau directors, will have this reporting requirement.
Correct.
Okay.
So, following up on Commissioner Saltzman's question, what percentage of our applicants currently disclose their demographic information?
I don't know that, Commissioner Fritz. I'd have to get back to you on that. So it is, I know we have a higher percentage in terms of gender and ethnicity than we do for persons with disability, although that, of course, is based somewhat on just anecdotal information because it is difficult to know what you don't know. But that is my understanding from discussions that we have had. And then veteran status, of course, because of the preference associated with it, are much more likely to self-identify.
And so are we allowed to put on our hiring applications that we have this Charles Jordan standard and that people with disabilities and minorities have a likely chance of getting interviewed?
I would not recommend putting that on the job announcements. And we do have our general statement in terms of, you know, qualified persons of color, et cetera, being encouraged to apply for city's positions. And I think that's probably the language we would still want to keep on our announcements.
I'm a little concerned if we don't know, we can't. For veterans' preference, people have to state that they're requesting veterans' preference, and then we have to interview all veterans that are minimally qualified. Are we potentially going to get into difficulties by having this policy that then somebody says, well, I wasn't interviewed?
That's a very good question, Commissioner. There is always a possibility, of course. I think in this case, we hope it would be relatively minimal, particularly the way the resolution is worded. Where we're talking about qualifications, still retaining some discretion over the, you know, number of people who might be interviewed, and also, you know, looking at a voluntary disclosure. So, I think there's always a possibility, unfortunately.
Well, that's a good segue into my proposed amendments, colleagues, that I just handed out a slightly revised version with a language suggested by Ms. Canwitt. And these are amendments to the Charles Jordan rule rather than the direct reporting rule. The first one is to change any qualified minority candidate to any, the highest qualified minority candidates. I think to imply that there might only be one minority candidate seems to be setting the bar a little low, and that we should be saying that we're going to interview the highest qualified minority candidates and the highest quality candidates who identify as a person with a disability. If there is more than one qualified candidate, the commissioner in charge or designee retains the discretion to determine the number of qualified candidates who will be interviewed. So that's my first motion.
Okay,
so
let's second these that for with, purpose of discussion.
Okay.
And let's Please. Just go
and
through
then let's
this.
Go on I'll your second amendment, and then I've got a basically a housekeeping amendment as well, but go ahead.
So the second one builds on the first one, and it addresses the issue of qualified women candidates. Our city demographics dashboard of April 2015 shows that 65% of all managers and supervisors are male, compared with 35% female, and that overall city employees are 58% male, 42% female. For bureau directors, 70% are male and only 30% are female. So given that this pattern is so clear, I would like to add the highest qualified women candidates as a category amongst that commissioners should be considering when they're deciding who to interview.
Okay.
So that's my second amendment.
I'm going to second it for purpose of discussion.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Then adding to an additional, further be it resolved, I didn't underline this one because it's all additional, be it further resolved that commissioners will report on the process chosen for bureau director selection, including the number of minorities, women, and people with disabilities interviewed concurrently with the direct appointment report for direct hires within bureaus and council offices. So that if you look at the second resolution, it doesn't require any reporting from commissioners about their bureau director selections, and it doesn't require any reporting on the success of the first ordinance. And so that's, I think we need to have some data to find out what's happening, and a transparent process, and doing it concurrently with the direct appointment report seems to make sense.
Second it for discussion.
Thank you. And then the final amendment is to add a further be it resolved that be it resolved that the Bureau of Human Resources shall investigate hiring or contracting with a company with expertise in recruiting minorities, women, and people with disabilities to assist in the recruitment and hiring of bureau directors and upper management positions listed as open recruitments. I think if we're really going to get serious and make this Charles Jordan standard something that will actually produce results, we need to put our money where our mouths are and hire headhunters, or whatever the polite term for headhunters is, to help get the word out that we've got a high-level position or high-level positions available, and that we're welcoming people of all kinds to come and apply for them.
So if I may second it, and may I speak to that
sure.
for a moment?
Go ahead, please.
So I had a similar amendment I was going to offer. I think Commissioner Fritz has captured the spirit of what my concern was. The lesson that I've learned by as a result of supervising a lot of searches for bureau directors and high-level positions is that perhaps the single most important thing that we do during the process is go upstream and recruit. If what we do is put an ad in the scanner and send out an email and use a couple listservs, we're not honoring the process in terms of affirmatively seeking and recruiting the most qualified people. And the most qualified people for some of these high-level positions that we're looking for are also being recruited by other public and private institutions. And at the very elite level, there's heavy competition. You and I have talked about this, Anna, that it is essential that we go upstream and we take affirmative action steps to identify talent and recruit talent. Now, in supporting this is not intended directly or indirectly to be a criticism of the current HR team, but it's a recognition that in a highly competitive and national environment, having a third-party consultant to help us could give us the extra advantage we need to make sure we secure the most talented people. So that's the spirit in which I support that. I have a potential amendment, Mayor, and a question.
Okay.
Back to you, Dante. One thing that struck me about the resolution is this is the year in which we've made some significant breakthroughs in another area of discrimination, which is the historic discrimination against people based on sexual orientation, and we still have a lot of work to do. We can't get federal protections passed, for example. Why limit it to race, ethnicity, gender, status as a veteran, and person with a disability? Why isn't the city of Portland including sexual orientation as a category for reporting?
There was no specific reason not to include it, so I mean, I'm happy to accept it.
We don't ask people that on the application.
Yeah, I mean, it's not where you're going to get the information, I guess, would be my question.
Most of the people from the LGBT community that I've hired and given the times we live in are very explicit about their sexuality, and it is I think it is vitally important that city government reflect the growing diversity of our community, which includes the LGBTQ community.
We already have a city code policy that requires non-discrimination, including...
We have the same code that applies to every other category here. We've left out sexual minorities. We have race, ethnicity, we have gender, we have status as a veteran, we have person with a disability. It strikes me we've at least left out one category, which is someone who identifies as a member of the LGBTQ community, and we have very specific policies about welcoming and not discriminating against people in that community.
Commissioner, I think it would be something that I need to check on because it isn't something we ask now in our application process, but I don't for sure know why we don't ask it. We tend to stay with sort of the federal categories in terms of that kind of information that we're asking, so I need to do a little more research. Doesn't necessarily affect the amendment. I'm just not sure we have that data.
I think we should take a look at state law more than federal law, since federal law is lagging.
Correct. Yes, that makes sense.
I guess my only comment, Commissioner, would be that the other identities that are being identified are, in fact, very visible, whereas sexual orientation may not be or is not in the same way. And so the expectation is that you're reporting on what you know, and how am I trying to say this? With the expectation that you would do better outreach based on a lack, if you will, for lack of a better term, in these other categories, whereas you may not in fact know but have a staff full of people who identify as gay or LGBTQ. There's no way to identify that.
That opens the door to a rather contentious conversation about status. I'm going back to an old-fashioned view of status, which is you either have a protected status or you don't. And in this state, you do. And so if we are saying that we are going to try to hire a workforce that is reflective of the community at large, and we have specific language about non-discrimination against LGBTQ, it seems to me, and they are protected status under state law, it seems to me we should not exclude them.
Do we have any evidence that our City of Portland employees don't
reflect the diversity of sexual orientations of the city at large?
The purpose of this resolution is to capture data so that we can make judgments about our hiring policies generally. We wouldn't be doing this exercise if we had good data.
I guess I'm pondering your point, Commissioner Fish, and obviously Anna and Dante are as well. I think it deserves thought and consideration. I think, and I want to give Sam Sachs an opportunity to come up in a minute, as well as members of the Jordan family who are here if they'd like to. But what we're trying to address here by adopting a Portland version of the Rooney Rule and then starting to collect this data is that we have clear and convincing evidence of underrepresentation when it comes to people of color, people with disabilities in the ranks of our top managers. I'm not sure if we have that kind of evidence of underrepresentation for the LGBTQ community. But it doesn't mean your point's invalid. It's just,
let me just be very clear, Mayor.
Coming into a different door than this idea was brought to us through.
Well, the Rooney Rule, in fairness, I'm talking about the second resolution, mm-hmm. which talks about collecting data.
Right, I understand.
Which I did not understand as initially part of the Rooney Rule. And if we're going to collect data for purposes of making judgments, are there disparities? Are we being consistent with our policies?
Yeah,
are we taking steps? Seems to me we ought to cast as broad a net as possible to collect the good data. And I'm not suggesting we compel people to disclose their status. Many of the people that I know who have sought employment from the community or have current jobs are proud and open and out about their status. So I think in this day and age that's less a concern. But
yeah, I hear you. Okay. If we can, maybe let's take that topic up and not – it doesn't sound like you're quite yet ready to propose amendment, but you might be. I have one more amendment, which is just a housekeeping one, which I'd like to put on the table, and that is it's already been referred to here in discussion, and that is we should refer to this as the Charles Jordan standard rather than the Charles Jordan rule in the text of the first resolution. So I would move that amendment.
Second.
Okay. Other
question please. Or comment on amendment number 3? Just from my understanding, it's a request that there's a reporting on the process that was used after a hiring has been done. Is that correct?
For bureau directors.
Okay.
Because there's no requirement for that under the Charles Jordan standard.
No.
And it's not covered by the current language in the direct appointment.
Well, I guess I would suggest that it is if commissioners are required on a semi-annual basis to report on the number of positions that they've hired outside of an HR recruitment process. So I think, in fact, it is covered, unless I'm missing something. The process is not.
No.
The individuals who were hired are.
Right. But there's nothing that says if you went through the HR process, how many people did you interview who are people of color, people with disabilities, and hopefully people who are women. That part is not covered. You either say you did a direct process or you did the – and if you had a direct appointment, you have to say who it is,
right,
or what the demographics of that person. But we don't get the feedback on is our process working to at least get more people interviewed.
Understand. So I guess –
Is the way your Third Amendment – is it your intent that that be aggregate data?
Yes, although I doubt many of us have more than one bureau director appointment every 6 months.
No, but I mean we get into this – there are some candidates who fall short who don't like who have expressed a reservation about having their names.
Oh yeah, no, I wasn't expecting that we put.
I mean, when I say aggregate, I mean maybe what's the what am I saying?
It's basically de-identified. Yes, de-identified. Yeah.
Well, just
data,
as the number of minorities, women, and people with disabilities, it doesn't say who were they.
They were okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to discuss these amendments a bit more, but I suggest in this case actually that we might want to have Sam and, again, if any members of the Jordan family want to speak about this and take some other public testimony and then return to.
Okay. I had a couple of comments on them, and I'll wait until the discussion is.
Why don't you ponder Commissioner Fish's point a little more, and then we can take that up as an amendment if you'd like at that point. Okay. Thank you both. And then, Sam, please come on up. Dion or anyone else from the Jordan family, if you'd like to come on up. Appreciate you again bringing this good thing forward to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Sam Sachs, and this has been fantastic conversation. Very exciting to be here. As you know, I came in front of this body almost a year ago, and to make a suggestion that City Council do a better job of identifying people of color when seeking out directors and interviewing at least one qualified minority candidate. And this comes from the Rooney Rule. Just a little brief history. In 2002 or 3, I believe, the NFL created the Rooney Rule because they saw disparity, overwhelming disparity of the lack of minority coaches in the NFL. Majority of the players are black or minority, and I think at the time they had maybe one or two out of the 28 teams were black coaches. And at that time, 132 of the NCAA Division I programs, there was, I believe, six minority coaches, and 50 to 55% of the players were minorities. So the Rooney Rule, once it was implemented in the NFL, requires each team to really do engagement. You know, there's outreach and there's engagement. Outreach, I think, is what Commissioner Fish was talking about when you send an email to a listserv and you let people know in the scanner. Engagement is really actually, you know, going out into the community or contacting somebody and saying, hey, we, and identifying some candidate, qualified candidate, and saying we want to interview you. Once the Rooney Rule was implemented in the NFL, minority hiring went up 23%. It's fluctuated since then. And in 2009, the state of Oregon became the first state in the country to pass a law which covers all state-funded schools. When I initially took it to the state, the House of Representatives, it was just for football, for head coaching football coaches. The Housing Education Committee decided to include, much like a discussion you're having here today, to include all coaches. And so now volleyball, baseball, every coach at a state-funded school, if a job comes open, they have to interview a qualified minority candidate and athletic director. So I decided to bring that idea here. I think it works when you you don't have to, from my understanding, you don't have to have a process or interview or, you know, open it up for people, but you can. And that's why I brought this to you, is to say if the city of Portland is really serious about diversity and equity and does want to advance that goal or that you know, that message, then I think this is the way to do it. Because I think once you do that, you're going to see members of our own staff, employees in each bureau are now going to be encouraged. They're going to feel like they can rise to the top here. People throughout the country will want to come to Portland. I know this because whenever a head coaching job comes open in Oregon, I hear a lot of coaches from across the country call me and say, hey, can you let me know or can you put my name in? So I think Portland will be a destination where people of color and people of disability will look to when director positions come open. So I strongly encourage you to pass the Charles Jordan standard, and I really appreciate the conversation. I know that it's not perfect, and by that I mean there are so many other things that can be added to it to make it even better, to include you know, people of disability is included, and just to really do a much better job of including those who are underrepresented in our community.
And congratulations for your advocacy on this, and thank you for your passion around this issue. We have a bunch of amendments we're looking at, and I want to just start with Commissioner Fritz has proposed in her first amendment narrowing the category to the highest qualified rather than any qualified. You, in your prepared remarks, talked about a qualified. Do you have a strong view about this? And we're balancing a number of things. And I will say, just my own experience going through a lot of searches, that highest qualified to me means a person who's a real contender by virtue of the screening process and the ratings that come out of the. I set up an independent panel of insiders and outsiders to screen when we do a competitive process. And any is a larger pool, and it may include people that are not likely to be considered for the job. Do you have a view of that?
Yeah, Commissioner, Mayor, Commissioner, members of Council. I was going to try not to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers today, but
They got in the playoffs.
They're in the playoffs now. That's going to be impossible now because of your question. I would say to that, Mike Tomlin, when the Pittsburgh Steelers went to hire a new coach after Bill Cowher stepped down, they had to interview one qualified minority candidate to fit in with the Rooney Rule. And what they did was they interviewed a coordinator, not a defensive coordinator, but actually a position coach. Mike Tomlin was a position coach with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I believe he was a defensive back coach. So he may not have been the most highly qualified of minority candidates out there, but he was interviewed and ultimately selected over two other white coaches, Coach Grimm and Coach Wisenhunt, who everyone believed would get the job. So my point is, I think when you say highest qualified, there may be somebody out there, even that works in the city, that maybe they're not the highest qualified individual, but they have a chance and they get into an interview and they blow you away and you decide to choose them. So I don't know if I would say highest qualified. I think to keep it simple, a qualified minority candidate.
Sorry, A or any?
A qualified minority candidate.
A.
A.
Well, that's important because, I mean, the highest, I think that's what her, the intent of her amendment is.
Yeah, just to get away from tokenism and to get to have all of the highest qualified minority candidates be interviewed.
Commissioner, members
you
of the council.
You don't have to do that here. We're not the state.
Okay. I don't think that tokenism, I hear that a lot in the process through this journey. People would say that Mike Tomlin's interview was tokenism because he wasn't the highest qualified. But he's been to two Super Bowls, and he has won one. So you don't really know who you're going to hire. You really don't know if they're the most qualified or they're going to perform the best until you interview that individual. So tokenism isn't a word that I really get into much in this discussion, along with reverse racism, because I don't think there is tokenism. Tokenism to me is you say, well, we're going to interview a qualified minority candidate, and you interview somebody who's black that works, in say parks that, is qualified because they work for the city, but they're not qualified to be the bureau director for water. And so that to me would be tokenism, is just picking somebody to fill the interview.
So I don't know if I can quite match you on football jargon, football knowledge, but I'm going to take a stab at it. In football, there's a known quantity of people who've been defensive coordinators, various coaching positions in NFL teams. There is a finite number of Division I and other elite football college squads. In our positions, there are 600,000 people in the city of Portland. There are millions of people in the country of the United States. When we hired for the Office of Equity and Human Rights, we got over 70 applications for the director. I'm guessing at least 50 of those were people of color. And so the wording of the resolution right now that we would have to interview any qualified candidate would have meant doing 50 interviews. So that was why I was going to the highest qualified of the minority candidates, the highest qualified. And obviously, you can't tell until you get into an interview situation. On the other hand, you cannot interview everybody. What we are finding with the veterans preference is that because we are required to interview every minimally qualified veterans preference, it ends up taking a lot of time because some of the folks that we are required to interview are minimally qualified and are not qualified.
Mr. Fritz, I'm having this sense that we're getting hung up on language and maybe there's more agreement. So can I call upon the Harvard graduate, law graduate on the council and put it to Steve? Steve, Sam said that we should interview a qualified minority candidate. That should be the standard, A. The current resolution says any, and Commissioner Fritz has offered an amendment to clarify that the highest qualified candidate would be interviewed. I see they can all be reconciled if the idea is to at least have one and not require multiple. What's your reading?
One thing I learned at Harvard Law School was defer to people who are smarter than you in an issue and thought about it more. I think in this case, Commissioner Fritz is that person, so I defer to her. Seriously, I think that her formulation makes the most sense, because if we say A, then we're saying just one. If we say any, then we're saying that we could wind up being required to interview 50 people. I think that the highest qualified is a little, candidates is a little vague, because it doesn't, I mean, I think sort of deliberately so. It doesn't mandate that you interview two or six or whatever, although I would take it, since it says candidates, to mean that you should probably interview more than one if they're available. So that seems actually about as good as we can get.
I thought you were going to have to translate this into baseball in order to respond. So that was a, this is a good discussion.
And that was actually there on that
Sam,
point.
Is that consistent with the spirit of what you're proposing?
Yeah, the Rooney Rule and the law in Oregon, you have to interview at least one qualified minority candidate. So I may have, maybe I wasn't clear because I did say A, but I think the goal is to interview at least one qualified minority candidate. And that really is up to you in deciding, I'm not going to get caught up on the highest. As long as one qualified minority candidate and person of disability is interviewed for the position, that's really the goal. And if you want to interview more than that, fantastic.
That clarifies it for me, because the goal should be at least one, but not preclude more.
Correct.
And my understanding of the modifier highest is simply to clarify that we're talking about people who are highly qualified contenders for the job, and not just everybody who put their name in. And you've made it very clear that there has to be at least one from that pool. I think Commissioner Fritz's amendment, as I listen to this discussion, is consistent with what you, as the sponsor of this, would like to see, and I think just gives us a little more clarity about the pool.
Well, and it's good that we're having this discussion, because the folks that attempted to draft these resolutions were trying to do some careful balancing here. One, these are resolutions. They're not ordinances. We're not recreating civil service procedures for hiring bureau directors, because you did the right thing, Commissioner Saltzman, when you led that reform. And unlike some occupants of the mayor's chair, I'm a believer in the commission form of government and the prerogatives of each commissioner under the charter to hire and fire bureau directors under that authority and under those reforms. So we're trying to balance that, the full exercise of that authority for commissioners in charge and for bureau directors, but also to state our shared goals and expectations in writing, in a resolution, in a way that we can see how we're doing and how the community can see how we're doing. And where we're measuring in the case of the direct hire reporting effort, well, let's see how we're doing. So we've tried to strike that balance. The words matter, but the intention, the shared understanding of our intentions matter at least as much in this case, because that's what we're trying to capture here with this resolution.
I'll just push back a little bit, Mayor. I think it has to be absolutely crystal clear about what we're doing, because, as you know, with things like veterans' preferences and other finish line considerations we have to go through, it is a heavily prescribed process. And
that
I mean,
is, yeah.
It is once you've got your group of people in the room helping you screen the finalists, and HR comes and starts laying out the ground rules, it's heavily prescribed. So I would, and if it's not prescribed, if we don't play it by the book, then anyone who doesn't get the job has a potential claim.
Fair enough.
So I want us to be clear about what we're doing, crystal clear, so that we don't get sideways. And with the veterans' preference, you do have this. The veterans' preference adds points to someone's candidacy, and so that's why we
in a civil service process or in a
when you're hiring for a director
can add points.
Legally does add points.
Legally does in the case of the veterans' preference. Okay.
And that's why we have someone at the chart averaging out the scores, adding the points. So, because it's so heavily prescribed, I just want to make sure we're very clear about the language.
This is not that prescriptive, but nevertheless, I take your point about clarity. I think it sounds to me like we've reached some agreement that the language that Commissioner Fritz has proposed in Amendment 1 works and accomplishes what you hoped we would accomplish with this.
Yes.
Other points you want to raise, Sam, or other questions for Sam? Thank you.
I did want to say before I step away that I want to thank Dante, the Director of Office of Equity and Human Rights. I want to thank Anna Canwet, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Hales. This process has been, I think it's exciting for me to be here and to watch this process and discussion, but I think the thing that's has been really a joy is to see the work that's happened together between the Office of Human Resources, Office of Equity, the Commissioner, and really from the start there was never a sense of, well, this will never work. It was, how can we make this work? And Anna Canwit was really determined to make sure that it wasn't just something that we do just to do, to say that we're doing the right thing. She wanted to make sure that that it has the results and the impact that we're hoping for, which is that we have more directors of color, persons of disability, and someday more, hopefully more council members of color, and perhaps a mayor of color. So it's just been really a joy for me to be a part of the process and work together and see that collaboration. And I also want to thank the Charles Jordan family, because when I historically, when this rule has been passed to college, it's called the Eddie Robinson rule, after the great coach from Grambling. And so when thinking about who would we name this after, there was really only one person, that was Charles Jordan. And I just want to thank their family and their influence. And the main thing for them is that it be called a standard, because they don't want you to be required to do the right thing or be held to a rule, but more they want you to set a standard and do the right thing because it's your choice and you know it's the right thing. And so hopefully going forward, it will be referred to as the Charles Jordan standard. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Let's see who else would like to speak. Please come on up. And Ms. Heaster is here again, a second time today, if you'd like to speak as well, from our Disability Commission. So come on up.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
I am Trish Jordan Anderson. I am Charles Jordan's eldest daughter. First, as the Jordan family, we'd like to extend our extreme gratitude to Sam for all the work that he's done, to the council for considering this. I was going to address the standard part, but he could not have said it better at all. That's exactly what my dad would have said. But in the beginning of this, I asked Sam, what about gay people and lesbian people? There is no doubt in my mind that, in our mind, that my father would want them to be included. We're talking about people that have been discriminated against because of who they were born to be. Okay, so you have to include this group. My dad would have included this group. I'd really like you to include this group too.
Good point. Thank you.
Well, and first of all, thank you to the family for being here. It was a proud day when we named a community center after your dad, and this is now a proud day when we're taking the next step. Just to be clear, I'd be satisfied with just expanding the categories we collect data on and the resolution. I think there's we have some very clear data about disparities with African Americans in city employment and leadership. And there's an amendment on the table to expand to women, but I think the first resolution was really a test case. We're trying to see whether through this mechanism we can bolster participation and leadership. I'm more comfortable narrowing it with the first resolution, as long as in the second resolution we're compiling data to determine whether there's other actions we need to take. But I appreciate your testimony.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if we are going to make sure that this set of people is protected, you can't exclude. We're talking about the way people were born and how people treat them because of who they were born to be. I am the black sheep of the family. I am feeling this. So that's where we stand on this.
Okay.
Thank you for your consideration.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all for being here. Lavon, welcome back.
Hello. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lavon Heaster. I'm the chair of the Portland Commission on Disability. I'm happy to be back to talk about this. When Dante first came to the Portland Commission on Disability and mentioned that when they'd been talking about this, or actually I think Judith told me that when they were talking about this, Dante had said, well, we want to include people with disabilities. I was like, thank you, because our group is often a group that is left out. And this is, when you look at the employment numbers, people are comfortable that people with disabilities have an unemployment rate of 85%. You know, when you really put it in front of them, people will probably go, oh, that's not good and everything. Not only do we have an unemployment rate that is 85%, but we have people who are horribly underemployed. And so I want to thank Dante for bringing us into this, but I also want to express a little bit of concern. And this is just from my own personal experience, a quick story of, I was a medical social worker. I was making almost $30 an hour, and then I lost my job. It was disability related. And I went out and started looking for employment, and the vocational rehabilitation system I was working with started offering me a job, looking at jobs that were about $10 an hour. And really, they had people who had completed high school and had no college doing those same jobs. So I have concerns about finding enough highly qualified people with disabilities when it comes to these appointments. I think that one thing that Anna Canwit said that was really important to me is this is one of the tools. I think it's really important we're included, but I also think it's really important that we look at other tools, because when you have a group that is really struggling to get their needs met and to be brought up to the level, you know, beyond janitorial, beyond landscaping, and beyond information and referral, which was what I was referred to doing, you know, having a master's degree, having worked, and having some very specialized skills. So I would like to just encourage you to think about how can you use this as one of the tools, but also bolster it.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Safiya Ullman, and I'm a member of the Office of Equity and Human Rights Bureau Advisory Committee. And I am here today as a community member and as a woman of color to urge you to support the direct appointment resolution. I really appreciate the City Council reaffirming its support of equity by adopting a citywide racial equity last year. And as stated in the direct appointment proposal, one of the strategies associated with achieving this goal is to be data-driven. And the data collected as a result of this direct appointments proposal would serve as another resource for underrepresented communities to hold the City of Portland leaders accountable for equity in hiring practices. Currently, there is no diversity and equity accountability for bureau directors who hire through the direct appointment process, and this is not okay. This is actually really is concerning. This resolution will really help the city to track the demographic data for the hiring. So as a member of the Office of Equity and Human Rights Bureau Advisory Committee, and again, as a woman of color, it is my hope that you vote for the direct appointment resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Anyone else would like to speak on these resolutions? If not, then let's bring Dante and Anna back up, please, and we can talk some more about the amendments and anything else that's come up in discussion here today.
Mayor, we've agreed that we're going to change it to the Rooney standard.
Rooney standard. So that's that amendment. That amendment is on the table along with the others, but that, yes. Okay. So
back to the question of sexual orientation. Some more thoughts?
No. I don't have any more thoughts on that, actually.
It's okay to admit that, yeah.
No more thoughts. Again, I still have to look in terms of the actual reporting piece. What I did have a thought about, though, was the question that was asked, I think, by Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fish in terms of how we obtain the data when we're talking about the Jordan Standard. And I do want to be very clear, you know, we will develop the language that we will use for candidates, but we need to be clear that it's a voluntary self-disclosure. We will explain what the Jordan Standard is, but it will be important that it is voluntary for people to disclose the status, whatever statuses we decide that you all decide to include in the standard. So that's one point, and that would be covered. It was obviously not part of the resolution, but it would be part of the implementation of the resolution. The second comment I had, and I'm not quite sure where the discussion is on this in terms of highest qualified. I know that Sam Sachs addressed this too. I think it can be problematic to determine highest qualified before you're doing an interview. I think there is some language, for example, clearly qualified as opposed to highest. I know there is an interest in avoiding, as I think Sam also alluded to this, interviewing a, you know, necessarily a candidate that may barely meet minimum qualifications.
So, Anna, there's another way to solve that is because Sam has made it very clear that the standard is at least one. So we could just say to interview at least one qualified minority candidate.
Yes, and I assuming from that it would be a, because we have other categories, so a qualified candidate from each of the categories.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that works. It's obviously up to council. My initial concern when we were looking at one, I wasn't sure if the message there would be watering down the Jordan Standard, but I do understand the obvious concern of if, you know, there are, which would be, I suppose, an enviable position to be in if we had 50 qualified candidates that met the standards. So anything I think that allows, makes it clear that the requirement is not to interview all of the qualified candidate, I think does address Commissioner Fritz's concerns. I only had one more comment, and that is on the amendment to hire a recruitment firm. I think that's great and is a tool that I think could be very useful, particularly in the outreach efforts, since my staff is limited, has taken cuts over several budget years. But just want you to consider when we do that, where the money comes from in order to hire that firm. So. That would be my only comment there.
The amendment will, if it's passed, will direct you to investigate hiring. The
yes.
Company. It doesn't
right.
direct you to proceed to hire yes. without authorization.
Let's end the drama. It comes from the sponsor's bureau. So
right.
it comes
so.
From the Parks Bureau. So let's, what?
Oh, all of them, yes.
But you met me and OMF, so okay, there we go.
There's usually a budget for doing the recruitment. There's the advertising on the various places and such, so that usually comes out of the bureau's budget.
And so, Anna, give us a sense, when you hire a third-party firm to help in a recruitment with the intent of connecting to beyond the usual suspect of organizations and networks and develop a list of qualified people that you then recruit, I mean, do we have some experience working with those firms? We know what the cost might be?
We don't. We have typically not done that. We have used our in-house resources, First, Joe Wall, who came to us when he was at Bureau of Human Resources, was a recruiter for McDonald Corporation and did the high-level executive-type recruitments. And then Linda Lewis, the current manager, had much of that experience in the private sector as well. So I don't know what the cost would be. I think that would obviously be part of the investigation and also focusing on what a firm would have to offer us in terms of outreach, because that's the part that we're really interested in. If a firm is simply going to LinkedIn, we can do that, and we do that. But that's not sufficient in terms of the kind of outreach we're talking about.
I mean, I think one thing to also consider is, are there firms that can come in and give us, in essence, an audit of how we go about it and give us the tools we need so that in some instances we can do it in-house and in other instances we go outside?